Hey everybody, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is a quick hit for night two of Nashville. This is RJ, and I am here with a guest, Tim, who reached out to us on Facebook. Tim, thanks for reaching out, and thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, I'm honored.
Appreciate it. So you're on your way back from two nights in Nashville. Those people who are looking for a quick hit from us, we actually did a couch report last night instead, and hope we'll put a link to that in case people want to check it out. But we were able to do a set break and a pre-show kind of couch report and talk about night one a little bit. But night two, we haven't really got into yet. Tim, it seemed to me like a little bit of a strange first set, including, you know, several slow songs in the middle, but a really great opening part, really great closing part. Curious about your take, given that that you were there on that first set.
It's weird. You know, afterwards, I saw some commentary online of people talking about how off they were. And it's just funny when you're there. I don't know if it's the live setting or that you're watching it or the clarity of listening to it recorded or through a webcast versus, you know, coming out of the speakers. But I thought it was phenomenal. And I'm curious to go back and listen to it and be like, oh, yeah, that was rough here or there. I mean, I have my criticisms like anybody, but I thought it was really good. And right before the set started, I was just talking to some guy next to me, and he said something about the full moon, and we made a joke about, you know, it's going to get weird. And coming out with the 2001 second song was like, oh my God, what are we in for here, you know? And even 555, which is normally like a clean, funky song, felt kind of dirty. And it just, I'm thinking like, are we going to go Antelope or Carini or something like that right in the middle of the first set?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just heard the whole crowd's disappointment, which, you know, always lets me down a little bit when you can audibly hear the whole place go like, oh, but it did.
For Farmhouse.
Say, it did feel that way a little bit, you know. And my take has always been, when you look at the whole of what we love about Phish and what they do and how they surprise you and all that, I'm fine with any direction they want to go, because that slow song could have been the most beautiful version or someone could have really felt, you just never know. But I think it's safe to say it really, it didn't really work. You know, Farmhouse, Halfway to the Moon, actually, I thought Paige's piano solo, it just really stuck out as being amazing. And the
I like that song a lot.
I like it too. And that worked, you know, it was kind of weird between what it was between, like starting out kind of raging and then slow and then that, and then slow again with Waste. But there, the little jam in Halfway to the Moon, it almost had a feel of like Taste, which is a song I really miss hearing. It sounded a little more like building, and then, you know, I love that riff at the end, that escalating riff. And then, you know, it got kind of crazy again. Even though Maze got a little bit botched, it still, the energy was there. And that Din, I thought, was really good, but kind of mimicked the first night, where it seems like most often people kind of get a feel a tone of a Phish show as either being kind of like evil and dark or being really kind of transcendent and climbing. And both nights just kind of felt like very experimental, but I thought
totally.
It worked.
Yeah.
But they did seem different, don't you think?
Yeah. The Bathtub Gin, especially, it's sort of a Tom and I said on the couch report that we did at set break, like it went type two almost immediately. It was like, the jam was nowhere near the song structure at all, really.
Right. And the other thing that I thought was that I really liked in it, well, first of all, coming out of the, you know, the final vocal melodies, it's almost like I got this feeling watching it that it's almost like they were all possessed by something. All of a sudden, it's like on a dime, they all moved to like this really beautiful, peaceful, it's almost like they were in a bubble for a minute. And then I think it was that cut, I can't remember if it was there, the second set, they just like totally switched gears without kind of bridging to it. And I remember that happening a couple times the first night, maybe during Everything's Right, where instead of kind of going from A to B to C, but seeing how they got there, it's almost like they just stopped and started over on something else, but collectively. And again, it worked because it was a little different than what we expect. And that's what we like about fish. It's funny, people's expectations on fish are so constant, but what we love about them is them exceeding or doing something that we don't expect. And then you get upset with them when they attempt to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think that's just the, you know, like you're talking a lot about the kind of psychology of the fish fan, you know, it's sort of like stuff that we all go back and forth through. It's interesting that I feel like when I was in Hampton, all three nights I was just expecting a down with disease every night, and then you guys got it the second night in Nashville. This is the first time I played this tour. It's not like it's been that long, but I was kind of expecting it. They rely on that as a second set vehicle so much. So you guys probably weren't surprised to get that as the opener, right?
When it started, it was like, oh, of course. I didn't
right.
see it coming. But yeah, as soon as it started, it's like, oh, that's exactly it, you know? And it kind of blending into first night or the whole run or whatever, you know, the hype on things like Hampton or Alpharetta or the shows that it seems like the entire fan base looks forward to, and talk about expectations, you know, something mm-hmm. like the Hampton run.
Right.
And then having them, I haven't listened to the shows, but it sure seems like they delivered in Hampton. So I kind of thought to myself, like, oh, am I going to go to like the sleepy, you know, kind of thrown together shows between Hampton and Vegas? And, you know, the first night coming out with the Tweet Prize into Party Time was like, oh, okay, no, they're ready. And the whole thing, the whole run felt really good to me. I don't know if it was perfect, but it was perfect for me. And my dad actually went with me. He's never seen them. He's just seen me go see them a million times. And so he was interested and came. And, you know, his first comment at Set Break was, I get it now.
That's awesome,
and
man. That's great.
The two nights, yeah, and I thought the two nights, it was like, if you were to say to some, like, let me give you a sample of what fish does, I thought the two nights collectively had it all.
Yeah, it's sort of a benefit of the multi-night run, you know? You get a little bit of everything over the two nights. I agree. It seemed like two really good shows. The first set, like you said, you described it well, and I think they recovered. You know, that bathtub gin at the end was like a nice way to bring it back, but it really went into outer space. So the screaming through space thing was they're getting weird this fall. Before we let you continue on your drive, Tim, what are your Halloween thoughts?
Well, again, I don't have expectations or even wishes, but if I were to guess,
that makes you a good fish fan.
I think it's going to be the two when I think about it, and I am going, the two thoughts that I have is I think it's going to be something a little more obscure. I think it's going to be more Velvet Underground Little Feet than Quadrophenia or David Bowie. It just seems like that what would be what's in line following suit. And I also keep having this vision that I think it's going to be a little more of a production like Exile on Main Street was, with like horns or something additional to just them.
That's really interesting. I like that perspective. I hadn't thought about the production piece, but I think the obscure thing is true. And I'm hearing so much soundscape and psychedelic music from this tour that, you know, obviously I want to speculate, but we'll all be completely shocked, probably, or at least those of us who would will admit to it, you know.
Yeah, something that I'm curious if it'll continue through Chicago that just dawned on me this morning. I don't think in Albany, but starting in Hampton, they've played one bust out from past Halloween albums every night. Mm-hmm. What was it in Hampton? They did
What was it in Hampton? They did not know.
Oh, Skin It Back.
Right. Skin It Back.
From Little Feet. Then Cool It Down from Velvet Underground. And last night they did, what the hell did they do? Cross-Eyed and Painless.
Right. That's a good point.
I
don't think I even saw that.
Like, yeah, it just dawned on me this morning. So I'm curious if tomorrow they play like Why My Guitar Gently Weeps or Drowned or one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good call, man. That Hampton had the Skin It Back, of course, and actually had the Shine a Light encore on Saturday night. So yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and there was Strawberry Letter Friday, but not from. It's just
right.
a cover.
Is that a foreshadow? Are they going to go more like something R&B or something like that? Who knows?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. That's a really good call. I wonder if other people listening have thoughts on it. Please, obviously, let us know. That's an interesting observation on the covers piece. Well, what was your takeaway after two nights of Nashville? Now that you're heading into next week.
Well. You know, I know you started to talk about Second Set. We got off topic.
Oh, yeah.
A couple things. I haven't, before this run, I saw them in Pittsburgh last year. I didn't get to any of the dozen, and I didn't go to any summer tour. So I've heard about all these things that I was finally able to see with my own eyes, even some of the newer songs, you know, the soul theme and all of that. I hadn't seen the Moving Lights in person, and, that was impressive, to say the least.
It's pretty crazy. It's a pretty crazy production.
Yeah. It seems like Mike has really hit a new level of confidence almost. It seems like he's almost playing lead sometimes. I was really taken back with his playing. One sort of, I don't know, critical observation. I listened to the Ask Trey from the serious interview on the way down, and he was talking about how dialed in his tone was, and he's back to Trey 94 easily and that kind of thing. And I don't know how it came through on the recording, but his tone sounded off to me both nights. It wasn't necessarily bad, it just didn't quite sound like Trey. It sounded like Trey playing through somebody else's rig, like if he sat in with somebody and it was his style and hand style and fingering style, but there's almost like a buzziness, or like it reminded me of like plugging an Ibanez guitar into a shitty amp or something like that. Did you notice any of that?
I didn't, not from listening or watching the webcast, but Ryan from Trey's Guitar Rig got to talk with Trey at Hampton for like approximately 30 to 60 minutes about his rig, and if you don't follow at Trey's Guitar Rig on Twitter, you should, because he's just started kind of looking at the rig right now and kind of cataloging what's different. And there are things that are different, and I don't know enough to tell you, but I know that there's a lot that's different now in terms of equipment. But I think it's mostly pedals and gear, not like the core components. But but that might be worth looking into further. And people who are listening, tweet at us and let us know what you think. Because I didn't notice that last night. What I noticed last night was just a lot of difficulty with the compositions, you know. But Soul Planet and Bathtub Gin, the kind of bookends of the set, were Trey's playing was really great. It was almost like it was just not a good night for composed tunes. You know, they just wanted to kind of improvise.
The only thing I could think of too, it was cold, like. It was bordering like cold, not just cool, but cold. And, just like somehow Trey never breaks a guitar string. I never see them sweat under those lights, especially now that they're like 4 feet off their head.
Right.
So, it had to affect their fingering. It just had to. I mean, I want to say it was like 40 out, but it felt damp and cold, and that had to affect them for sure. I just, both nights, you know, no matter how much you move, my joints and everything felt tight, and that had to play a part, I would think.
Yeah, that's a good
maybe
call.
The body not following what the mind or heart wanted to do.
But you still got two great shows.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, to kind of round out the second set, Sense and Subtle Sounds, I think that was played relatively recently, but that really took me by surprise. And they played so delicately out of the vocal part. You know, got into like those fun teases, and it's always fun to see that like they still have that. You know, I mean, that's one of the things in the 90s that attracted me to Phish was like the antics that way.
Yeah.
And
yep, totally.
They still have that at their age this many years in is neat to me. Nomad, even though it's catchy, I've always felt like it was a little bit cheap. That song always sounds to me like if I told you, hey, hum your version of a Phish funk song to me, like come up with one on your own, that's what it would be. You know, it's a little bit generic, but being there live last night, it just it had it all, and I felt like this is perfect Phish. Like this is the perfect example of quirkiness and funkiness and having that climbing catch and release type jam. I thought that was really, really great. Nothing special or memorable per se, but just when you're at a show and you're like, this is an outdoor Phish show right here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's great.
And what else? Boogie on Hood. Nothing really to write home on either of that. I thought the crowd really loved Boogie On being played. I wish they wouldn't have taken that like couple second pause between, and Mike, you know, kind of gave a tease by putting that fuzz in. I think if they would have went right into that out of No Man's, the place would have went crazy.
Yeah, with a little transition. Yeah, that's fair. And the that was like the second time this tour also, I think. And the Antelope Encore, that was another one at Hampton that I was waiting for. It's only been since Dick's that they played it, but it felt like it was coming every night. But you got it as an encore, which is a nice encore. It wasn't like the craziest Antelope, but nice that it wasn't just like a short ballad or something as an encore.
Yeah, being there, it made me feel, it felt like damn near perfect there. And I did feel that coming. I thought it was going to be placed oddly in like the middle of a set, but it just felt like that kind of night, like for a really noisy, kind of evil Antelope. And it felt that way there, but that was one of the main things I saw people online talking about where they kind of missed. So I'm curious to listen back to that one. You know, the difference of being live versus hearing it clear and through headphones or speakers or what have you.
Yeah.
And another piece of that venue, you know, I went there on a whim in 16 and caught those shows. And, you know, I'm gonna ruin it now, but I think that venue is one of the best kept secrets on tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in downtown Nashville. It seats like 7,000 people. It's tiny. I don't know how it doesn't sell out instantly and isn't like shoulder to shoulder packed, because both in 16 and you know, this run, it felt like you have a lot of space, whether you're in the pavilion or the lawn. There's no pavilion over the seats, only over the stage. So the sound comes through in a really clear, almost strikingly crisp way. And because there's nothing over you sending the sound down.
Got it.
Yep. The seats are out in the open. The lawn's out in the open. It's a small lawn. And behind the lawn is a city sidewalk street. So it's a perfect show to go to if you don't have a ticket. You can literally stand at a fence, watch and hear the whole thing.
That's cool. Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that it's just an amazing place to visit.
There.
Well,
there's no lot scene, though. That's one thing.
Oh, right.
There's like nowhere to have it.
Well, Tim, what do you think we should play on the way out?
Sense and Subtle Sounds. Right out of the vocals, they just started so quiet. And then I think it'll be fun for people to hear the teases of other songs.
Cool. Well, thanks for reaching out and for joining us and for sharing your experience with us. We appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Are you going to be in Vegas, RJ?
Yeah, I'll be there for the first two nights.
Cool. I'll come and find you and say hi.
All right, man. I hope so. Well, thanks again. Appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks. See you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.